good morning. It's 8 o'clock, Monday, June the 21st, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. Good morning. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. My guest today is Jennifer Radcliffe from Greenfield Plant Farm to talk about shopping for plants. Amy Duke is also here because she's an excellent plant shopper, and I'm sure she'll have some good ideas to share as well. And I also have my friend, Master Gardener Bibby Terry, to help out here in the studio. She can jump in, too, if she wants to talk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. WAIF, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It is 8:04, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM, the real stepchild radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show was Coconuts on the CD Nature's Bounty by Mystical Moods. If you have any comments or suggestions, we invite you to write us or call us at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, or call us at 513-749-1444. Call in during the show with questions for my guests. The studio line is 749-1444. Before we get started with our guests, I would like to do a little catch-up from last week. We had a Dr. Gregory Dallum in, who's an entomologist from NKU, talking about mosquitoes and the West Nile virus. And there was a couple of points that we should have brought up that we just didn't get time to cover. And I'll just bring them up very quickly for people's information. The first one is that the gutters on your house are a good source of breeding for mosquitoes if you have clogged gutters or have standing water there. So keep your house gutters clean. The other thing is that those little mosquito dunks, they do work, and they don't hurt the fish in your pond. It's a natural thing. It's Bacillus thuringiensis, the little BT dunks that you put in, and they do keep the mosquitoes from breeding. Okay. Jennifer, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
When Amy and I have been out to Greenfield Plant Farm, and you're there, you're just running around You've got so much energy. When you're not dealing with the customers, you're dealing with the plants.
I have energy from 9 to 5. You should see me afterwards.
But you must like what you do.
I do like what I do. That is one of the benefits. I like being outdoors. I like the plants. And generally speaking, the people who come to us are doing so because they enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Tell us about your background and what you do at the Greenfield Plant Farm.
Well, my background is that I studied horticulture, floriculture from The Ohio State University, a four-year course. And then after that time, not having family in the industry, I have a resume that reads like a soap opera. I have tried almost every venue of horticulture. My husband and I moved to Cincinnati, I think, in 88. And I took time off from plants to grow children, and then back into horticulture part-time, and now full-time at Greenfield Plant Farm.
Well, that's quite a history. Okay. How long have you been at Greenfield?
I'll be going on my fourth year this September.
Okay. Have you ever seen one of Dave Maley's puppet shows?
No, but I've heard about them.
They're great.
In fact, my jaw dropped at the lunch table when he told us he delivered a speech with puppets.
Yeah, yeah. He made a talk to the Daily Hostas Society a while back about hostas, and it was all a puppet show. It was pretty clever.
Yeah, I heard he's very good at that.
Yeah. Well, our topic today is plant shopping.
And right in time for our summer sale, which begins on July 2nd and 3rd. Oh. Close the 4th to watch fireworks, and then back for the 5th through the 10th at Greenfield Plant Farm.
And just say where Greenfield Plant Farm is.
Greenfield has two locations. The farm, which is in Mainville, which is off the beaten track, off of Route 48 on Stevens Road, and Clef Pike location, which is the corner of Clef and Hunley and an old farmstead.
Okay. And the Clef is a relatively new.
The Clef, this is our second spring or growing season for the Clef Pike location. It was formerly known as the Mountain Laurel Nursery, but we took over the lease last year.
Okay.
What hours are you open?
This right now during this part of the season, the farm is open 9:30 to 5 o'clock Monday through Wednesday and Saturday. Thursday are late hours at 9:30 to 8 o'clock. Friday, again, late hours, 9:30 to 8 o'clock. And Sunday, 11 to 5. Now, to confuse things, Clef is open at different times. They are 9:30 to 6, Monday through Wednesday and Saturday. Same as us on Thursday and Friday, 9:30 to 8 o'clock. And Sunday, 10:30 to 6 o'clock. And the reason being so is they're on the drive home. So a little bit more incentive to stop on your way home to pick up that plant so that you have something to do in the evening.
That's a great amount of time to give people the flexibility to shop.
It is, but you always seem to, you know, there seems to be three that stray into the gates past close hour and disappointed.
but still, it's there for them.
It is there for them.
Well, you have a problem in that you have to figure out what the public wants to buy.
Well, right now is the time that we're putting together our shopping list at Greenfield, which is a unique nursery in that we are a destination location and we offer a unique product mix. We have, or try to have, the largest selection of perennial plants in one location, and this year we tallied over 2,500 varieties of herbaceous perennial plants.
And I bet you know all of them.
I do. I've touched them all. When you pick them up and carry them, they wear off on you. You tend to know them. But in that, we try to offer your old favorites, the newest introductions, and then some collection of plants, the choice and select hostas, a rock garden collection, and so on and so forth. We also run the gamut. We are both wholesale and retail. So we service garden centers, landscapers, designers, and then our own customer base, which for Mainville and Clef are different. And the Clef location is an established residential location with mature trees and a mature gardener that likes a different offering. The Mainville location is relatively new construction, so we have new gardeners in new homesteads that are looking for a different product.
Hmm. Well, I guess it looks like you know your customers. Business is always pretty good when we've been out there. Well, that aspect of how do you decide, particularly on the new plants that are offered every year, how do you decide what's gonna sell?
Well,
and what's going to grow?
What's going to grow? And it's unusual because Mainville is a destination location, because of our unique product offering and because we are off the beaten trail. We get the who's who of gardeners at Mainville. We get the John and Amy Dukes that walk in with a list. And how do you decide? I mean, where do you come up with that list?
I look at pictures during the winter in catalogs, and I really try really hard not to ever order anything from a catalog. I'd rather have it that's grown here and it's already ready to plant.
So that you have an established root,
right.
You can see the plant,
exactly.
You can see the habit of the plant, and you can see that you're getting a healthy start.
Exactly.
Well, right now is the time that the main emphasis of the gardening season is winding down. April, May, and June are our busiest times. When you get in July and August, it's vacation time, it's hot weather time, and people aren't in the garden as much as they were in April, May, and June. This is the time in which our industry puts on trade shows, symposiums, seminars, talks, and this is when you can take tours and see trial gardens to see what's up and coming for next year. With perennials, because it is such a popular genre of plant material, you get dozens and dozens of new offerings per year, and we get to see those at some of these seminars. Now, to judge what the people are going to like, it's a matter of taste. And then to know if the plant is hardy, you rely on the reputation of the propagator or grower, just like you rely on the reputation of the plant farm that you shop from, or where you buy your meat, or where you buy your sundries. It is a matter of taste.
Right. I have a question.
Okay.
We would not ever have need to do this when we buy something from Greenfield, but we've become familiar and aware that it's necessary to check roots.
Yes.
Is there like a good way to do that if we happen to be in another place and we want to find out the root situation of the plant? A polite way, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Besides picking up their skirts and looking underneath.
Exactly.
Because for the first 3 years at Greenfield, I was a wholesale manager, so it was part of my job responsibilities to walk the farm and to see which crops we had size of and that were ready to offer for wholesale sales. And in times like that, I would literally pick up the plant, turn it over, pull the plant out of the pot, and look at the root zone to make sure that the roots were touching the bottom of the plant or well enough established that plant could survive or do well for the customer that was buying it. So you could do that as well. The people might object for you dumping their plants out, but also if you just picked up the plant at the drain holes at the bottom, if you see some root activity through the drain holes, you know that that plant is least rooted to the bottom and the sides of the pots and then has a better chance of surviving when you put it into the big wide world.
I always have a fear of going into a plant store and turning it upside down and lifting the pot off and having all the dirt fall out on the floor.
Yeah, that is it. And also the Osmocote, that top dressing of Osmocote,
right.
That cost them about 50 cents, falls on the ground, and you lost that as well. Of course, the weeds in that area grow really well.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But I guess I could then just cover and say, well, why did you put this 3-inch pot plant in a 1-gallon pot?
You can also see that, too. On a newly upgraded plant, you can see the rim of the old pot surface.
True. That's a good clue.
Yeah. But, you know, that is just a generation of the plants. The plants get comfortable into a gallon after they've grown into a smaller size.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when you go to these conferences to see the new plants and everything, I guess they tell you what's so great about whatever
they
it
do.
Is.
They try. And a lot of the literature, you can tell the marketing, every plant is better than the next one that you've read about. It has a brighter color, a deeper foliage, is more disease resistant. But taking a look at, and then actually having hands-on experience with the plant. My coworkers at Greenfield, there is one amongst us, Susan, I think has tried every plant we've ever grown. So she is a remarkable resource for what grows, what doesn't grow, problems or benefits of a certain plant variety.
Yeah. Well, we like to try the new stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that is a question that we get from the discerning gardeners who come into Greenfield. What's new?
Yeah.
What's new? But along that line, because perennials are pumped onto the market so quickly, sometimes you get a disappointment. Case in point was Coreopsis Limerick Ruby, which came out about 3 years ago. It was a very promising plant, a very interesting bloom cover color on a nicely habited, all-summer blooming Coreopsis, threadleaf Coreopsis, that by initial literature was hardy down to zone 4 or negative 10 degrees. And then after the first season, we realized if this was not true, they regraded the plant and now has a hardiness rating of zone 7.
Oh, yeah, that's disappointing.
That is disappointing. And we're finding out that, you know, Amy, you look at catalogs, what's been prevalent in the catalogs and what people ask for, Echinacea razzmatazz, which is a headed echinacea, very popular, and people have seen it in catalogs, but as a growing industry, we can't get our hands on it. They promoted it faster than the stock is available.
Uh-huh.
Helleborus were very, well touted, all the different colors of helleborus.
Yes.
But in culture, they're very slow to come on. You can't get your hands on them fast enough. Helleborus orientalis is going to be the perennial plant of the year for 2005, and they let us know early enough because that plant is so slow in the pot that it gives growers and propagators a chance to get supplies up enough to meet demand.
So you've started with this already. Do you have some?
Yes, we do. We have a number of courts on staff, and hopefully the last far enough. I mean, perennial plant of the year this year is the painted fern, and we have very little representation of it this year because it was so popular and sold out.
That
so
is
quickly.
Very popular, and it's reliable.
It is.
It's one of the most favorite ferns.
Yeah, you can ignore that thing, let it go crunchy, and it forgives you and comes back another time.
Yes.
Doesn't do it twice, but. Yeah,
but
also the orange metabrite, the orange-purple coneflower that came out onto the market so fast, and you've seen it in magazines, but you can't get your hands on it. Somebody owns the rights to that plant this year, so we cannot offer it nor sell it. And they're finding that the color may not be as stable as they would like. So, a lot of these plants come on, they have interest, they're marketed, you get a hold of them, you experience them for a couple years, and you learn that there are troubles or drawbacks.
We've discovered some plants that are really hard to find, at least they have been for us, but they're great plants, and nobody's ever, carry them. The five-leaf Aurelia,
mm-hmm.
for example, is just done great for us. There's one called Colipo euonymus. We found it at Lowe's.
Did you?
And it just stood out. It's a shrub. It's a variegated leaf, thick, heavy leaf, and it looks just like that summer, winter. It's evergreen, and
it's
just fantastic.
Very
the sun.
Static.
The tag on it says full sun, but we've got it in deep shade, and it looks
great.
And it's
reacting just fine.
Yeah.
I mean, oftentimes at the box stores, because they draw from a pool of plants, they don't know what they have. And you can find some really good varieties if you know what you're looking for.
Well, it just looked pretty, and we bought one, I guess, initially, and then
to try it in the deep shade, because we were looking for something that would, a bone plant that would work in some of our deep shade, and it did.
Yeah. We've been real happy with that.
By the way, we have that five-leaf Aurelia at Greenfield. But we don't have that euonymus.
Yeah, I know you've got the five-leaf Aurelia Greenfield. Or you had one anyway.
Well, you bought one, but we have more.
Oh, do you? Okay, well, that's good.
Okay.
The other one that I think Jim Hansel told me about, and I couldn't find one several years ago, and I ended up having to go to Spring Grove Cemetery, and they bought one for me.
Oh.
It's the Pragans viburnum.
Hmm.
And I've seen them this year in a couple of stores, so they're coming out. But that is just a great viburnum.
Well, that's one of the drawbacks of the woody material, because it takes so long in the field to get a cultured crop for commercial sales.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between the woody material and the perennials. Perennials through tissue culture and through rooted cuttings come on the market a lot quicker.
A lot faster, sure.
Which can be confusing to a lot of people in the industry.
Yeah, you can do cuttings of some of the woody stuff too.
Yes, you can. Almost every plant has the ability to differentiate any part of its body to become an entire plant.
Right. It's just people don't do it, I guess.
It's an addicting hobby when you get into it.
Oh, I know. Amy was talking about she looks at pictures and helps her decide what's going to look good in the garden. I'm really skeptical of catalogs for the most part. They tend to be what I think is a little deceptive, a lot of them.
They can be. Every plant is better than the next. Well, and you see a beautiful picture that when you get the plant, you think this can't possibly be so.
Yeah. A lot of them, of course, they show mature, well-established plants, mm-hmm. and then when you order it, you get a little bare root stick.
And how are they on the returns?
Well, we haven't tried to return them. We usually just let them die if they're...
We've experienced that we get a credit for
so you can
further
purchases
but not...
Is that a never-ending cycle, then?
It can be.
It can
with some of them.
Well...
That shall be nameless, but with some of them.
At Greenfield, we want you to succeed. Success is going to bring you back, and the best way to succeed is to put the right plant in the right place. Now, with a perennial, you often have time to change that place. If it's not working within one place, you often have enough energy and enough of the plant left that you can change its location and try it again. I have known one gardener that put Hosta Tattoo in four locations before she found the perfect spot for the perfect little maple leaf watermark in the center of the plant.
Hmm.
But
that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
I think Mike Clare, he's the extension agent, horticultural extension agent over in Boone County, always says that he considers everything hardy until he kills it himself. I take the other end of the spectrum. I tend to say I consider everything an annual until it survives a second year.
Are you a pessimist or an optimist? Do you think we are Zone 5 or Zone 6?
I use Zone 6.
You use Zone 6? I'm a pessimist. I say Zone 5 just to make sure it survives.
Well... Yeah,
but you're also down into the city, around the outlying areas. We get the frost pockets before you do, and plus have poorer soil, I think, than the more established.
We have pretty good soil where we are, and we're probably actually a Zone 7.
Really?
Yeah, I would.
It's always amazing from the northern outskirts of Cincinnati to travel down to what used to be Alt Park and the Flower Show and see shrubs in bloom, trees in bloom, where we weren't experiencing in our areas.
We might have a better indication if we see if the erythema come back next year.
Yeah.
And
well, gardening is always kind of experimental.
Yes. And gardeners are the weirdest mix of patient and impatient people.
Amy looks at situation when a plant dies as another shopping opportunity.
Yes.
So
a new hole to fill. I look at it as I'm improving my soil one plug at a time.
I want to ask Amy a question because I've observed that sometimes when she goes into a plant store, garden center, seriously shopping, people will think she works there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want her to explain why that is.
It's because I don't carry a purse with me. I just have my credit card and keys in my pocket and my hands free so I can grab more plants.
Yes.
So I always thought it was, her expertise with plants and confidence in the store and that kind of stuff.
It probably does show. She knows what she's looking for. I mean, Amy generally arrives with a list in her hand.
Yeah.
And she knows what she's looking for. She only seeks me down for location of anything. We do also get the other end of the spectrum because Mainville is in a vast growing area. Mm-hmm. We are experiencing 600 to 800 houses on the corner, and those people are looking to fill their yard, and they're all beginner new homeowners and beginner gardeners. So they walk into a place like Greenfield Plant Farm, and it can be very confusing. There are 2,500 choices for them, and they don't know which direction to go. So with Greenfield, and that hopes to give you success, we do try to congregate the sun plants together, the shade plants together, and give you the literature you need to make a right choice. Most people choose through emotion, and they choose that blooming thing that they're staring at right then and there. Even the most avid gardeners will pick something in bloom over something that's not.
I like the blooming stuff very much.
Right, which is why most of us have a very nice spring garden, because we're shopping in spring.
Right.
And my garden blooms and it's purple, and you think, gee.
I'm finding as I add another year to this gardening experience, that I'm going probably more toward foliage for color and texture than the blooming, because you get longer satisfaction from it.
About 17 times a year, somebody comes in and thinks that they've reinvented the wheel by saying, I want a perennial that comes back year after year, that behaves like an annual, that blooms all season long. I don't have to touch it. Well, such a thing really doesn't exist, but right. You can get that longevity and long appearance with a foliage plant, because you get a static look.
And there's so many different color foliages.
There are, and that seems to be going the way. There used to be a club called the Anything But Green Club, and they would go on variegated. I heard that club is disbanded. But with the heucheras and all sorts of the leaf colors, we are going into such tapestry effect with our foliages.
But what we keep reminding ourselves, and it's true, that green's a color, too.
Green is a color, too, but I always view green as like cheese on pizza. You get it. You don't have to order it. You get it anyway. But you can play with the colors. And then the bloom is just an add-on incentive into what you've got going. Right now in my garden, the part that draws my eyes is the golden yellow foliages matched with the golden yellow blooms at this one little vignette in the garden. And it makes quite a difference. It attracts.
Well, Bibby, how is your shopping going?
Right now, I think my husband Tom is at home going, oh my gosh, we're going out to Greenfield Plant Farm. very well. I mean, I do the same thing. I tend to look at catalogs all winter long. Because I have so much shade in my yard, I'm always looking for the thing that will grow in shade. And I think that it's such a help when you say that you have the literature there for the plants that you buy, because you are so addicted, I think, to just anything that might work in shade, if that's what you've got to deal with.
Do you have dry shade with root competition?
Actually, we have very wet shade, which is wonderful. We have we have 45 trees overhanging most of our backyard, and so it keeps the moisture well. So far, it's doing beautifully, but I will have to say a lot of what's there is because people, other master gardeners including, have added so much to it, and so I just put it in and hope that it does what it's going to do, but I'm not at all adverse to moving things around the next year. But I am definitely, you were talking about color, Jennifer, I'm definitely going with much more leaf color, because I find that I get so little bloom in that backwoods, but those yellow hostas, the blue hostas, the ones with much more white on the leaf, draw my eye the minute I go into the woods.
You often get customers in that complain that because they have shade, they have no choices. But at Greenfield Mainville, I've got house 2, house 3, house 4, house 5, house 6.
Yeah.
I've got 5 houses of shade material divided up into short shade, medium shade, tall shade, and then the hostas own one house all by themselves. Mm-hmm. But with the shade plants, there are a lot of ways that you can manipulate your shade and use plants to work beyond their limits. And with the shade, because there is that dense color, the tapestry effect of foliage is much more effective. And when I first saw the perennial plant of the year, the Japanese painted fern, to me it looked like a faded funeral parlor silk plant. But in a shaded setting, the plant glows. And used in combination with the burgundy-leaved heuchera or a silver-leaved pulmonaria, you've got a stunning triple collection.
Right. Well, now, you do a lot of containers, I know.
I do. I like that contained garden.
Amy does, too.
Yes.
I've been saying we've got about 100 containers in our garden every year. And she's told me that she counted the ones on the porch and came up with 40.
Just on the porch alone.
Just on the porch. So we may be underestimating what she's done out there. I don't know. But my question is, what kind of advice would you give a gardener if you're shopping for a plant for a container versus one to put in the ground?
Well, a contained plant has to be happy within its contained environment. So if you've got a 6-foot tall, 6-foot wide plant and you want to put it in a 12-inch pot. So things have to match. Things do have to match, but almost any plant can work in a contained environment. You just have to control what you're giving it, and that's the problem, or the benefit. A contained garden lets a gardener be anybody they want to be. You can be a bog gardener, you can be a rock
sure.
gardener, you can be an alpine gardener, and you can live in Ohio. Our newest subdivisions can have shade gardens just by having one spot of shade in their yard, and our oldest subdivisions can have sun gardens within a contained environment.
Uh-huh.
But that contained environment is directly dependent on you for everything it needs to survive.
But I would think it would be a lot easier because you can certainly control the soil.
Right.
And you can control the light depending on where you place the container. If it's not happy, you move it
correct.
To
and then
a
you can
place.
Control the fertilization by using some of those some of the every watering, the Peters or the Miracle-Gro, whatever is your choice within the container.
Yeah, and of course containers do take more water typically.
They do typically.
Yeah.
A lot of products that help to elongate your time are the soil polymers, the little water polymers, Waterworks,
well,
or Soil Moist.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen any research on that?
I use those in all the hanging baskets that we produce. That gives the gardener probably twice as long between. According to some of the literature I've read, they work up to 3 years rehydrating within the soil.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it'll go through that cycle, I would expect, probably almost indefinitely. But I'm a skeptic, I guess.
Are you a skeptic?
I took two pots, two plastic pots, and two coleas.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of wilty.
Okay.
Wilty. We use the coleas as indicator plants sometimes. And same soil, one with those crystals and one without.
And who did better?
Well, I watered them the same, and I just waited to see which one would wilt first, and they wilted at the same time. And so I rewatered them with the same amount of water, measured the water, and rehydrated them, and waited, and they wilted again at the same time. Did that 3 times, and I couldn't tell any difference.
Uh-huh.
So
between?
I'm kind of skeptical about whether that stuff really works.
Well, I'll have to run my own test, but I still think that they give you a little bit of time between the waterings that help you more toward succeed instead of fighting the wilt between.
Uh-huh. Well, that's my anecdotal research. I mean, it was just two pots. It was not serious research. But
I think
okay.
the key to that, don't you, John, is to make sure you get a plant in there that will come back.
Oh, yeah.
My poor New Guinea impatiens have had it over and over and over again, and they're just doing great.
Yeah, some plants only wilt once.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have a friend who says that impatiens are so dramatic.
Yes, they are. But aren't they wonderful?
Yes. Love them.
Okay, I'd like to take a little break here. It's 8:34, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio, with your host John Duke and my guests Jennifer Radcliffe and Amy Duke and Bibby Terry on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. I want to talk just a minute about the weather, because we have a very unusual kind of a situation going on right now. It's almost like not being in Cincinnati. The humidity's been so low, and it's been a little bit cooler than normal. The normal temperature for this time of year is low of 64 and a high of 85. Now, the thing that makes all this very special is that if you consider the long days that we have now, they're getting shorter, but they're still pretty long, and the temperature being between 50 and 86 degrees, that means you're getting photosynthesis all day long. And this is a maximum peak growth period. I don't know, we've noticed it in our garden, that things just the last 2 or 3 weeks even have really started kicking off, you know, with the foliage. Now, blooming is a little different trick, but certainly we're getting a lot of photosynthesis and probably more than we usually do on an average year, because it has been cool. We haven't seen that temperature pop up above 86 degrees. Photosynthesis slows way down below 50 degrees, and above 86 degrees, the little stomata close up because the plant's trying to conserve moisture when it gets hot, and so it can't take in carbon dioxide for photosynthesis, and so it slows down over 86 degrees. And so we're in that good temperature range. And it looks like it's going to continue for another week or two, which is great. So we have to go out and start pruning our garden pretty soon. Bibi, would you like to read a couple of public service announcements?
Sure, John. Thank you. Actually, this morning, this one's just perfect because this morning coming in, I heard on the radio, we've got some fires working in Cincinnati this morning. And one of the people who was actually in one of the fires mentioned that their smoke detectors went off. And so our first public service announcement this morning is about smoke detectors. Working smoke detectors can alert you to a fire in your home in time to escape harm, even if you're sleeping. Install smoke detectors on every level of your home, including the basement and outside of each sleeping area. And I think this is an interesting point. If you sleep with the door closed, install one inside your sleeping area as well. Test detectors every month and replace batteries once a year. They usually say that when the time changes, it's a great time to check your smoke detectors. And make sure that you replace your detectors that are more than 10 years old. This is one of the things I haven't thought of doing, and I think it's a good idea. There's so many new ones on the market right now that probably work better than those ones we installed over 10 years ago. So make sure, especially at this time when we've had some lightning along with this great weather that we've had because of all the moisture, please make sure that you update your smoke detectors or install them if by any chance you don't have them. And then another public service announcement this morning, John, is if you receive a request from a charity, and there's not a one of us here that doesn't over and over again, and this is one that you haven't supported in the past, before you say yes or send a check or anything, do your homework. Check the group out with the Better Business Bureau before sending a check or agreeing to donate. This is a message from your Better Business Bureau, and it's so important to do this. One really good rule of thumb is just tell them to send you some literature. Then you have the time to check it out before you actually make that donation. So both of these, smoke detectors and Better Business Bureau, both good things to think about.
Good advice. Good advice. What about the promo there?
Let's do this one, too. Perfect. Cutting, excuse me. I should say with my Kentucky accent. Hear the best in traditional bluegrass every Saturday morning from 8 to 11 a.m. on the Cutting the Grass Show. Your hosts Lee Elliott and Moonbeam will feature the music of Bill Monroe, the Stanley Brothers, Jimmy Martin, the Osborne Brothers, and many others each week. So tune in to WAIF on Saturday starting at 8 a.m. for the finest mix of bluegrass music. The best music around, so make sure you tune in at 8 o'clock.
Okay, thank you. Well, let's go back to our topic of shopping for plants.
Shopping.
Yes. I think that there must be an awful lot of naive gardeners.
There are, I'm sure.
They go in and they really don't know what they're looking for, and they look around and it looks pretty, so they think it'll...
Or they want it to.
Yeah.
They want that plant so bad, and they know that it's a shade plant and they have full sun, but can they make it work?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lady that came in at 5 till 5 on a weekday evening, and she declared that she was going to start gardening. And where does she begin? And really, one of the rules of thumb is to go to the most popular and well-established plants, the perennial plants of the year. Uh-huh. And those are plants that are tried and true over the United States and are voted that way by perennial plant members. So they are plants that get the majority of the vote. And this year it's a Japanese Paden fern. Last year it was Becky Daisy Shasta, the Shasta Daisy Becky. And in the past it's been Phlox David and Penstem and Husker's Red. And those are plants that have worked well on the counter and in the garden throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
This lady, to go on, I gave her the litany and walked her around, and she looked at things that she liked, and then she declared that she didn't really feel comfortable even touching the plant. So I don't know how she ended up in the garden. We hope that she becomes...
Did she buy something?
I think so.
Did you tell her to plant it green side up?
You never can be too sure. You've had customers that come back with a wilted plant in the pot, and it clearly has not been watered. And
yeah.
And they'll say,
"Oh yeah,
did I have to water that?"
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You can also tell a person that comes in that's got the feel, got the touch. And generally, the biggest key to success is enthusiasm and enjoyment.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying what you're doing, if you have enthusiasm, if you see some successes or enjoying the beauty that you're making in the garden, you'll be back. You'll be doing it again.
The Master Gardening program has really been helpful to us in being able to pick the right plant for a spot in the garden. And I kind of boil it down to three things, really. If you don't do them right, you're not going to be happy, and that's sun, soil, and water.
Correct.
Other things can kill your plants, but if you don't do those three things right, and starting with the sun, I don't think a lot of people know what full sun means.
You'll be surprised that most people aren't aware of the areas around their home, and they'll say, I need a plant for the front yard, and what exposure is that? Well, and they are very hard-pressed to tell you what exposure they get. They do not know their yard in that way. And a yard can change with the seasons.
Sure.
And the direction. But to monitor your yard, and then you'll get some gardeners that come in and say, well, I've got these frost pockets because the soil thaws there last. So they know that they have a spot that receives less sun than others.
Yeah, that's a good way to tell.
Yeah, but know your yard. But know the areas in which you're putting into, and then read the literature on the plant.
Right.
They generally give you some clues as to what that plant requires.
The garden books, where you can look up different plants, a lot of times they'll have that little symbol of sun, shade, or
And what does that mean?
They don't usually tell you what that means. And full sun is 6 hours or more.
Correct.
And full shade is 4 hours or less.
Or less.
So part sun, part shade is a pretty narrow window.
You'll get a plant that says sun to part sun. And what does that mean? What is the best for that plant?
Yeah.
And that's a plant that can do well in 6 to 8 hours of sun. Also, to know the areas of your home, a western exposure, when the air temperatures and soil temperatures and the tissues of that plant are hotter when the sun hits it, requires a more sunny plant, a plant that can tolerate more sun.
Yeah.
Whereas a shade plant can do well in an eastern exposure when the soil temperatures are cooler, the air temperatures are cooler, the tissues of the plant are cooler. That plant can take that sunnier eastern spot as well as a shadier spot.
Right. And hostas is a good example of that. You can grow hostas in a lot of sun.
You can. And generally speaking, the propagators, where they are field grown full sun.
Yeah.
And what you end up getting is a plant that bulks up quicker, which is better for the commercial value of the plant with a smaller leaf.
Right.
You will realize the larger leaves when they're grown in shadier spots.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We saw that with the oak leaf hydrangeas, too.
Mm-hmm.
We've got several oak leaf hydrangeas, and the ones that are in full sun, basically, get a lot of afternoon sun, they just bloom like crazy.
Right.
The ones that don't get any sun, the leaves are huge.
They're huge.
Yeah.
But the bloom is not.
It's not as good,
but it blooms
a little bit.
If you think about it, and you think about our native woodland plants,
the
larger leaf creates an umbrella for them to photosynthesize over a larger area.
They're reaching for that sun.
Right. So you can manipulate. You can also manipulate your shade by limbing up trees to 20 feet. Creating a brighter shade spot. I did a talk on shade gardening, and with that went to several resources at the library. A very good one was Ken Drew's book, Gardening in Shade.
Oh, yeah.
And there are about five qualifications for shade. Filtered shade, bright shade, dappled shade, pure shade, dry shade, and your qualifications for shade. And then you can manipulate by adding a white element for reflection, either white rock path, white rock, white fence, or a wall to lighten up the shady area.
Mm-hmm. Or you can cut down a tree. That's what we did this
Most
spring.
Most people don't use.
Well, we
had
to.
They worked too long to have that tree.
We had to, and I can tell a positive difference in the area that before was really deep, intense shade because it was between two houses.
Mm-hmm.
And this tree down, I think things are going to grow a lot better.
I've noticed too, Amy, that if I watch my shade garden and I notice when the sunlight filters through the trees, I can really plant some things at that spot that wouldn't work at another spot, and I'll get a little bit more color there than if I planted it even 2 or 3 feet in
That's
a different direction.
Idea.
Yeah, I just, you know, if you sit out there, of course, don't do this 24 hours a day, but if you watch it enough, you know when that filtered sunlight comes through. And my Monarda right now are just doing beautifully, even though they're in what I would call pretty deep shade, but there is a window of opportunity when the light hits that one spot.
That's great.
When we talk about the sun, soil, and water, of course, the soil is an important one. The extension offices usually say that about 90% of the plant problems that they get are soil-related.
Yes, we have a highly alkaline soil.
Yes.
And we have, at least in our area, it's a heavy clay soil. Mm-hmm. And those particles of the soil are so fine that not only does it wet hard, it dries hard. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of air within the soil mix. There's not a lot of porosity. So, and amending your soil to start is about 60% of your success.
Yeah, I've noticed when we get primarily a shrub, I'm not talking about perennials now, but a field-grown shrub mm-hmm. that's bald and burlapped, and it's got a clay ball, our soil is pretty good, pretty well-drained. And it's very hard to get moisture into that clay.
Oh, it is.
In the ball.
It is.
And you just really have to nurse it along.
Well, I've seen new gardeners in this area so excited about the prospect of their new home and their new environment. And they go out there with that little trowel expecting mm-hmm. to part the soil easily. And they go, king! And they come back in and they get the bigger shovel. And again, it's, you know, it's, it resists it. And then they come back for the spud bar and they go at it.
Well, in a couple of weeks on this show, we're going to have Sue Magnus on talking about soils and composting, and just mulching with compost makes a big difference.
Yeah,
it does. Getting those worms working for you.
And that's very important,
yeah.
Getting all the activity in the soil that give you natural fertility. Posy Power, pine soil conditioner, composted manures, your own compost, all great things to work into the soils.
Posy Power, I've never used that, and the reason I haven't is because one of the ingredients in it is lime.
Yeah, but generally, it's kind of a witch's brew.
Yeah, it's got a lot of other good stuff in it.
It's got a lot of good stuff in it, but you're right. It does have that. And it's a mass-produced product for a large area, so it is like a democracy. It just puts what everybody would need mm-hmm. into it. But I have, in one area of my yard, I did use the Posy Power, and I initially didn't buy it because it smelled so bad.
Malorganite.
Malorganite. And do you know where Malorganite comes from?
Oh, yes.
Milwaukee Organite, and it is human compost.
Waste from the treatment plant.
Right.
Sure.
It is processed material.
Yeah, it's sterilized, presumably.
It's sterilized, but it's a good deer repellent as well.
Okay.
But those products, in my one area of the garden where I did put Posy Power down, that soil is like cake. You can just move it. Uh-huh. It's deep and it's rich, and I can understand why it's been a positive product.
Well, it's got a lot of good stuff in it.
It does.
I used to use some Milorganite, just to top dress around, and it's good. It's mm-hmm. good stuff. Like you say, it is a little.
Speaking, our soil is so poor that anything you put on it is going to be a benefit.
Yeah. But I'm real pleased with working with compost and mulching with compost. And I've seen some research. Ohio State did some research about mulching with compost versus the shredded wood, mm-hmm. hardwood mulch that everybody uses.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line was it showed that you could get up to 5 times the bloom.
Off of the plants from that.
Because
not only are you giving that moisture retentive that the mulch does, but you're also putting some amendments into the soil.
Right, the
as
micronutrients,
well.
Mm-hmm. and you're not stealing nitrogen like the hardwood mulch can do.
Because they need the nitrogen to break down and compost.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Let's see. I think, do you folks have anything else you want to add?
I do. I have a question.
Okay.
You mentioned the alkaline soil. Is there a hydrangea that will bloom pink and or one that will bloom blue regardless of the condition of the soil?
Well, there's a new one out right now that's getting a lot of press. It even has its own color-coded bucket with its own name on the bucket, and it's called Endless Summer Hydrangea. And that, we had some in, and it is supposed to bloom on old wood and new wood. Now, hydrangeas are a big mystery to me, and I need to do a lot more study on them, that because some bloom on old wood. Therefore, that bloom information is within the stems through the winter, and your time for pruning is very crucial, and also the winter can abort that bloom within the stem. Nico Blue is a very popular hydrangea, but a very reluctant thing to bloom within the garden. Number one, because it does bloom on old wood, and it blooms will abort at 10 degrees or below.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that bloom is just eradicated during the winter months. Now, Endless Summer blooms on new wood and old wood, so by the literature, you're supposed to get a bloom throughout the season.
We have a couple, and they're doing pretty well.
And are they blue?
Yes, but I'm not sure if it's because of that they're in the right soil or not. And I just wondered.
They are not supposed to be a litmus test. They're not supposed to be pH reliant.
Okay, that was quick. So they're going to supposedly bloom blue even if you have high pH and alkaline soil.
Jennifer, what about the Annabelle?
Annabelle is one of the easiest, most rewarding hydrangeas to grow. It is what some people call the snowball bush, and people wonder why we use the Latin names, but this is one of the reasons why, because you'll get 10 people in asking for the snowball bush, and they could mean anything from a viburnum to hydrangea, or even a mock orange. So this is why we use the botanical names, because that identifies that plant down to the line. But Annabelle gives you that big, huge snowball bloom and can grow happily in a sunnier location as well as a part shade to shade location. Growing off of the base, you generally get about a height of about 3.5 feet, but the width will spread over time and you'll get quite a nice colony of bloom.
Okay. We just got a few minutes left. I told you it was a fast hour. I want to mention a couple of upcoming events that are of special interest to gardeners. The Civic Garden Center is hosting its 2004 Neighborhood Gardens Tour on Sunday, August the 1st. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. We're supposed to meet at the Civic Garden Center at 2 p.m. for welcoming and refreshments. That's at 2715 Reading Road. And then we board air-conditioned buses at 2:30 and return at 5:30. We'll be visiting two of the newest gardens and one established favorite. We'll meet some community gardeners who can show you firsthand the benefits of community gardening. You don't want to miss this tour, and you need to RSVP if you want a seat on the bus to the Civic Garden Center at 513-221-0981 by July 28th, which is about a month from now, I guess. All proceeds go to from the tour go to the Civic Garden Center's neighborhood gardening program. Another item's coming up with the Civic Garden Center, and the Hamilton County Department of Environmental Services is teaming up to offer a three-part series to teach every aspect of backyard composting. The course is free. The dates are Wednesday, July 7th, 14th, and 21st at the Civic Garden Center. That's 2715 Reading Road. It's from 3 to 6 p.m. To learn more and sign up, call the Civic Garden Center at 221-0981. And I'm going to be down there helping teach that one. Last item here for upcoming events is a good one. The Valley of the Daylilies is going to have an open house July 5th through the 11th. This is Dan Bachman's garden, and he has a great selection and good prices on daylilies. It's at 1850 State Route 123 in Lebanon, Ohio. You go out I-75 north to exit 32, and you take Route 123 and go east about 2 miles, and Dan's place, the Valley of the Daylilies, is on the left. And Dan's going to be on our show to talk about daylilies on July the 12th, too. Next week, my guest will be Marvin Duran from Marvin's Organic Garden. Marvin has a state-of-the-art greenhouse in Lebanon, Ohio, and he knows all about how to get your garden off of drugs and save you money, too. So tune in next week and learn all about organic garden and how that can benefit your garden and your pocketbook. And did you know that WAIF depends on you, our listeners, for financial support? We are an all-volunteer, nonprofit community radio station. For only $15, you can become a member of WAIFE FM. You can join on the webpage at www.waif883.org. All programs are archived on that webpage for up to 96 hours. And so you can listen to this program. If you've missed it, you can go back and catch up. And if you want to listen to previous shows, you can go to a new webpage. It's the American Compost Society webpage. And they have a link to the Master Gardener Hour, so you can listen to all the past shows here. And that web page is www.writethisforme.com/ACS. So that's the upcoming events and wrapping it up here. I want to thank Jennifer for coming. And
thank you for having me. It was fun.
And Bippy and Amy.
Thanks, John. It's terrific. By the way, I'm supposed to say hello to you from Clara Berger at Harvest Time, who said, please tell John Duke
good.
Hello.
I hope she's listening.
I hope she is, too.
Thanks, John. I enjoyed being here, too.
Okay. We have just a few minutes left here. It's 8:56, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. And so we'll head on out here with our theme music. This has been the Master Gardener Hour with John Duke. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF at 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, in care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday. My guest will be Marvin Duran, with great information about organic gardening. There's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. And stay tuned for One Voice. And take care of yourself. Your garden needs you. Thanks for listening.